9.
Wax had never shot a doctor before, but he did like trying out new experiences. Perhaps today would be the day. "I'm fine," he growled as the woman dabbed with cotton at the wound on his face where the massive brute had punched him. His lip had split.
"I'll decide that," she said.
Nearby, the iron stand constables marched 4 befuddled bandits along the train platform, which was flooded with light from a few tall arc lamps. Wax sat on a bench near where the other surgeons were attending to the wounded. Farther back, in the shadows of the night, a tarp covered the bodies they'd retrieved. There were far too many of those.
"It looks worse than it is," Wax said.
"You had blood all over your face, my lord."
"I wiped my forehead with a bloody hand."
She had wrapped that hand with gauze already, but had agreed that the cuts were superficial. Finally, she stepped back and sighed, nodding. Wax stood up, grabbing his damp suit coat and striding toward the train. He saw Maracy peering out of the front. She shook her head. No sign of Wayne or Milan. The lump inside Wax's stomach grew 2 sizes.
"Wayne'll be fine," he told himself. "He can heal from practically anything."
But there were ways to kill a blood maker. A shot to the back of the head. Prolonged suffocation. Basically anything that would have forced Wayne to keep healing until his ferrochemical storages ran out. And of course, there was the other thing. The strange effect that had somehow stolen Wax's allomantic powers. If that had worked on ferrochemy, too. Wax strode onto the train, stepping past Maracy without saying a word, and started his own search. The train was dark, now that it had stopped, and the only lights came from the platform outside.
There wasn't much to see by.
"Lord Wexilium?"
Constable Mathieu said, sticking his head in between 2 of the cars. The spindly man had a ready smile, which fell off his face as Wax bustled past.
"Busy," Wax said, entering the next car.
Blue lines let him see sources of metal even in the darkness. Wayne would be carrying metal vials and his bracers.
"Look for faint sources of metal, hidden behind something. Perhaps they just knocked him out and stuffed him somewhere."
The constable said from behind. "I was wondering if any of your other servants will be needing, emotional support?"
Wax frowned, looking out the window to where Druten was sitting, surrounded by no fewer than 3 nurses. He accepted a cup of tea from one while he complained about his ordeal. Wax could hear it even inside the train car.
"No," Wax said. "Thank you."
Mathieu followed him through the train. He was the local captain, though from what Wax gathered, this town was small enough that his big cases usually were on the order of who had been stealing Mrs. Hutchins' milk off her doorstep. He was glad to have found surgeons. Most of them probably worked half their time on cows, but it was better than nothing.
Not a few younger officers stood on the platform. They put away their stupid autograph books, fortunately, though they seemed deflated that their captain wouldn't let them pester Wax. "Where?" Wax thought, feeling more and more sick. Maracy arrived a moment later with an oil lamp, her light illuminating the train car for him as he poked through a cargo room full of mailbags. "He won't be in here," Wax thought. This was forward of the car that had been secretly carrying the payroll shipment. Wayne wouldn't have been able to cross through that one. They'd have had it blocked off even before the bandits arrived. Still, he wanted to be careful. He searched this one, then waved to Maracy and picked his way through the wreckage of the car that had been robbed. Mathieu tagged along.
"I have to say, Lord Wexilium, that we're very lucky you were aboard. The Night Street gang has been growing bolder and bolder, but I never thought they'd try something like this."
"So this is an established gang?" Maracy said.
"Oh, sure," Mathieu said. "Everyone in the area knows about the Night Streets, though mostly they hit cities closer to the roughs. We figure it's slim pickings out past the mountains, so they have begun to venture inward. But this? A full-on train robbery? And stealing Eric El Perol? That's daring. Those folks make weapons, you know."
"They had at least one allomancer with them,"
Wax said, leading the way through the empty courier car, which still smelled faintly of formaldehyde.
I hadn't heard that, Mathieu said. Even luckier you were along. I didn't stop them from getting away or from stealing the payroll. You killed or captured a good half of them, my lord. The ones we've got, they'll give us a lead on the others.
He hesitated.
We'll have to put together a posse, my lord. They'll be making for the roughs. Sure could use your help.
Wax swept this room, focusing on the blue lines. And the man with the limp?
My lord?
He seemed to be in charge of them, Wax said. A man in a fine suit who walked with a cane, about 6 feet tall, with a narrow face and dark hair. Who is he?
I don't know that one, my lord. Donny is the leader.
Big guy? Wax asked. Neck like a stump?
No, my lord. Donny is little and feisty. Evilest rusting kig you've ever seen.
Kig? It was slang for a Kolos-blooded person. Wax hadn't seen anyone among the bandits with the proper skin color for that.
Thank you, Captain, Wax said.
The man seemed to recognize it as a dismissal, but he hesitated.
And can we count on your help, my lord, when we chase down Donny and his gang? I'll let you know.
Mathieu saluted, which was completely inappropriate. Wax wasn't part of this jurisdiction, and retreated. Wax continued searching, pulling open a luggage compartment beneath the first passenger car. The metal lines leading into it only pointed at a few pieces of baggage.
Waxillium, Marcy said. You can't help with their hunt. We have a job already.
Might be related.
Might not be, she said. You heard him, Waxillium. These guys are a known criminal element.
Who happened to rob the very train we were on.
But at the same time seemed utterly shocked by the presence of an Allomancer gunman in the last car. Instead of tossing dynamite at us and riddling the coach with bullets, they sent a couple men to rob what they assumed would be easy pickings.
Wax chewed on that, then checked another luggage compartment, bracing himself as he did so. No bodies. He let out a breath.
I can't think about this right now, he said.
She nodded in understanding. They checked the other compartments, and he didn't see any suspicious lines, so they moved on. Crossing the space between cars, he spotted Steris watching him. She sat alone on a bench with a blanket around her shoulders, holding a cup of something that steamed. She seemed perfectly calm. He continued on. Losing friends was part of a lawman's life. It happened to him more times than he wanted to count. But after what had happened back in the city 6 months ago, well, he wasn't sure what losing Wayne would do to him. He steeled himself, moved to the next car, and opened the first of its luggage compartments, then froze. Faint steel lines coming from another place in this train car. They were moving. Wax rushed toward them. Marcy followed, suddenly alert, her lamp held high. The lines were coming from the floor inside one of the rooms. Only no luggage was on its racks, and no litter was on its floor. It was a private compartment that hadn't been rented out for the trip. Wax entered and ripped open the luggage compartment in the floor. Wayne blinked up at him. The younger man had mussed hair and his shirt was unbuttoned, but he wasn't in any bonds that Wax could see. He didn't seem to have been harmed at all. In fact, Wax crouched down, Marcy's light revealing what had been hidden to him by the overhang of the luggage compartment. Milan, shirt completely off, was in the compartment too. She sat up, entirely unashamed of her nudity.
"We stopped," she said. "Are we there already?"
"Well, how was I supposed to know we'd get rusting attacked?"
Wayne exclaimed, now more properly clothed, though his hair was still a mess. Wax sat listening with half an ear. The train officials had opened a room in the station for them to use. He knew he should be angry, but he was mostly just relieved.
"Because we are us," Marcy said, arms folded. "Because we're on our way to a dangerous situation. I don't know. You could at least have told us what you were doing."
She hesitated.
"And by the way, what do you think you were doing?"
Wayne bowed his head where he sat before her. Milan leaned against the wall near the door. She was looking toward the ceiling, as if trying to feign innocence.
"Moving on,"
Wayne said, pointing at Marcy.
"Like you told me to."
"That wasn't moving on. That was running on at full speed. It was shooting on forward like a bullet, Wayne."
"I don't like doing stuff halfway,"
he said solemnly, hand over his heart.
"It's been a long time since I had me a good neckin', on account of my diligent monogamous idealization of a beauteous but unavailable—"
"And how," Marcy interrupted, "did you not hear the fight? There was gunfire, Wayne, practically on top of you."
"Well, see," he said, growing red, "we was real busy. And we were down next to the tracks, which made a lot of noise. We'd wanted a place what was private-like, you know, and—"
He shrugged.
"Bah," Marcy said. "Do you realize how worried Waxillium was?"
"Don't bring me into this," Wax said, seated with his feet up on the next bench.
"Oh, and you approve of this behavior?" Marcy asked, turning on him.
"Heavens no," Wax said. "If I approved of half the things Wayne does, Harmony would probably strike me dead on the spot. But he's alive, and we're alive, and we can't blame him for getting distracted during what we assumed would be a simple ride." Marcy eyed him, then sighed and walked back out onto the platform, passing me Lon without a glance. Wayne stood and wandered over to him, pulling his box of gum from his pocket and tapping it against his palm to settle the powder inside.
"These thieves. Did one of them happen to shoot her when you weren't looking? 'Cause she's sure gotten stiff all of a sudden."
"She was just worried about you," Wax said. "I'll talk to her after she's cooled down." Milan left her position by the door.
"Was there anything strange about the attack?"
"Plenty of things," Wax said, standing and stretching. Rusts. Was he really getting too old for all this, as Lessie always joked with him? He usually felt exhilarated after a fight. "It's the deaths," he thought. Only one passenger had died, an older man, but they'd lost half a dozen payroll guards, not to mention the many wounded. "One of the bandits," he said to Milan. "He did something that dampened my allomancy."
"A leecher?"
she asked. Wax shook his head. "He didn't touch me." Leechers who burned chromium could blank another allomancer's metals, but it required touch. "It did feel the same. My steel was there one moment, then gone the next. But Milan, there was some kind of device involved. A little metal cube."
"Wait,"
a voice said. Marcy appeared in the doorway.
"A cube?"
All three of them looked at her, and she blushed in the harsh electric light.
"What?"
"You stalked away," Wayne pointed. "Indigenously."
"And now I'm stalking back in,"
Marcy said, striding toward Wax and fishing in her pocket.
"I can be indignant in here just as easily."
She pulled her hand out, holding a small metal cube. The same cube he'd seen before his steel was drained. Wax plucked it from her palm.
"Where'd you get this?"
"The guy with the cane dropped it," Marcy said. "He moved as if to pull a gun on me and raised this."
Wax turned it toward Milan, and she shook her head.
"That's a real strange gun," Wayne noted.
"Is there anything in that lore Vendel talked about," Wax said, "that mentions a device that negates allomancy?"
"Nothing I've heard,"
Milan said.
"I mean," Wayne said, "it ain't even got a barrel."
"But you said you don't pay attention to the research, Milan,"
Marcy said, taking the cube back.
"That's true."
"And if they could shoot the rustin' thing," Wayne added, "the bullet would be small as a flea."
Marcy sighed.
"Wayne, can't you ever let a joke die?"
"Hon, that joke started dead," he said. "I'm just giving it a proper burial."
"We need another train south," Marcy said, turning to the others.
"These bandits might have information," Wayne said. "Chasing them down could be useful. Sides, I didn't get to stomp none of them, on account of some untimely snogging."
"At least it was good snogging,"
Milan added. Then to Marcy's glare she added,
"What?
It was. Poor guy hadn't had a proper snog in years. Had a lot of pent-up energy.
You're not even human, Maracy said. You should be ashamed. Not to mention that you're 600 years old.
I'm young at heart. Really. I copied this one off a 16-year-old that I ate a few months back.
The room grew very still.
Oh, was that gauche?
Milan said, wincing.
That was gauche, wasn't it? She didn't taste very good, if that's anything to you. Hardly rotten at all, and... I should stop talking about this. New Saren, are we going or staying to chase bandits?
Going, Wax said, which earned a nod from Maracy. If this is connected, we'll run into them later. If it's not, then I'll see what I can do to help once we've dealt with my uncle.
And how are we going to get to New Saren? Wayne said. Doesn't look like our train will be leaving any time soon.
Freight train, Wax said, checking the wall lists. Coming through in an hour. They're going to move our train onto the repair track so we can flag that one down for a ride. It won't be comfortable, but it will get us there by morning. Go gather your luggage. Hopefully there aren't too many holes in it.
Wayne and Milan obeyed, walking out side by side. Maybe there was actually something there between them. If anything, Wayne didn't seem the least bit put out by being reminded just how alien and just how old Milan was. Then again, Wayne wasn't known for his taste in women. Or, well, his taste at all, really. Wax glanced at Maracy, who had remained behind. She held up the little cube, turning it over in her fingers, inspecting the intricate carvings it bore on its various faces.
"Can I get Vendel's notes back from you?" she said. "Maybe there's something in them about this thing."
More convinced this wasn't a random train robbery?
"Maybe a little,"
Maracy said.
"You should talk to my sister."
She seemed perfectly calm when I checked on her earlier.
"Of course she's calm," Maracy said. "She's Steris. But she's also doing needlework."
"And that's bad?"
"Steris only does needlework when she has an overwhelming desire to appear normal," Maracy said. "She read somewhere that it's an appropriate hobby for a woman of means. She hates it to death, but won't tell a soul. Trust me, if needlework is involved, she's upset. I could talk to her, but she's never listened to me. She didn't even know about me until we were teenagers. Besides, you'll need to get used to this."
She strode from the room, and Wax, oddly, found himself smiling. Whatever else could be said, Maracy had come a long way since he'd first met her. He took his jacket off the hook on the wall and slipped it on, then walked back into the night. Maracy was calling for the station master, probably to arrange their passage on the cargo train. Wax strolled along the tracks, passing cold electric lights until he reached the bench where Steris worked on her needlepoint. He settled down beside her.
"Maracy says you're having a tough time of it."
Steris paused her needlepoint.
"You're a very straightforward man, Lord Waxillium."
"Can be."
"As we both know, it's all an act. You were raised among Elendel's elite. You had tutors and diction coaches. In your youth, you spent your time at parties and balls."
"And then I spent 20 years in the roughs," Wax said. "The winds out there can weather the strongest granite. Are you surprised they can do the same to a man?"
She turned to him, head cocked to the side. Wax sighed and leaned back, stretching his legs out, ankles crossed.
"Have you ever been somewhere you didn't fit in? A place where everyone else seems to get it immediately? They know what to do. They know what to say. But Rosts, you have to work to untangle it all."
"That describes my entire life,"
Steris said softly.
He put his arm around her and let her rest her head on his shoulder. "Well, that's how those parties were for me. Social situations were a chore. Everyone laughing, and me just standing there, stressed out of my mind and trying to figure out the right thing to do. I didn't smile a lot back then. Guess I still don't. I'd escape the parties when I could, find my way to a quiet balcony."
"And do what? Read?"
Wax chuckled.
No. I don't mind a book now and then, but Wayne is the real reader.
Steris raised her head, looking surprised.
I'm serious, Wax said. Granted, he likes the ones with pictures now and then, but he does read. Often out loud. You should hear him do the voices to himself. Me? I'd just find a balcony that looked out over the city somewhere, and I'd stare. Listen.
He smiled.
When I was a boy, more than a few people thought I was slow because I'd sit there staring out a window.
Then you found your way to the Roughs.
I was so glad to be away from Ellendale and its phoniness. You call me Blunt. Well, that's the man I want to be. That's the man I admire. Perhaps I'm only acting like him, but it's a sincere act. Hang me, but it is.
Steris sat quietly for a few moments, head on his shoulder, and Wax stared out into the night. A nice night, all things considered.
You're wrong,
she noted, sounding drowsy.
You do smile. Most often when you're flying on lines of steel. It's the only time I think I see pure joy in you.
He looked down at her, but she'd apparently dozed off, judging by the way she was breathing. He settled back, thinking about what she'd said, until the cargo train finally pulled into the station.
Upper right quadrant of the new Ascendancy broadsheet. Does Harmony have a metal? The First Age philosopher, Galabras Menthon, meant this rhetorically, but even the Lord Mistborn thought on this when he famously said, "Having the has-sazed a metal?" From councils to pubs, the question is still debated. But now, breakthroughs in science have brought us closer to an answer. Continued on back. Farthing Mansion hit. An act of vandalism and thievery has the city's elite on edge. Late last night, someone broke into Farthing Mansion, stole some items, and vandalized the wall with a reverse gold symbol. Lady Farthing is offering a reward for the return of her jewelry. Please report all information to the Uptown Precinct. Continued on back. The mark of the vandal, the reverse gold symbol. Workers unite! Enormous mass meeting tonight at 7th hour at the crossing of Emble and 5th. Stand up to unfair taxes, low wages. Soother's Choice Chewing Gum. Stick it to the Dell and buy local. Soother's Choice is the only choice.